This is Anne Goldin, and my guest this week is Jen Coleman. She is the Outreach Director at the Oregon Environmental Council, and we talked a few months ago about some proposed legislation and about labeling products for children, and we're going to talk about what happened with that. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Anne. So happy to be talking to you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. So, let's see. February, there was a special, no, there was a regular, short session.
It was the short session, right, 35 days long.
And this is, we're talking about in Oregon, and what happened with your bill?
Well, the bill is a proposal that we had also brought the year before, and the concept is that, you know, we are learning more and more all the time about dangerous chemicals that have the potential to cause health effects that are in children's products.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be chemicals, you know, carcinogens or endocrine disruptors that are in there at little tiny amounts, but we just don't know how widespread they're used or how often our children are being exposed. We brought this bill that was basically a proposal saying that anybody who sells products in Oregon that are made for children need to reveal to the health authority if they contain chemicals that we know are carcinogens or endocrine disruptors or can somehow affect health.
Mm-hmm.
So it ended up being a list of 19 chemicals that companies would have to reveal.
Do you have the list?
I do have the list. I don't have it right in front of me, but I can tell you that it was a group of heavy metals, so things like arsenic and cadmium. And there was a list of a chemical class called phthalates, and phthalates are used in plastics as softeners. And then there were BPA was on the list, which is a plastic hardener. So it was a group of chemicals that everybody sort of widely agrees have some toxicity to health.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we brought the bill in the 35-day session, and you know, I have to give our legislators credit. There is a ton of stuff on their desks to handle in 35 days. Everything from what to name a park to how to manage our water resources. So this is one bill in a big stack on mm-hmm. their desk. And what happened is that it was introduced to legislature on February 3rd. There was a public hearing on the 4th. 10 days later, that committee of the Senate went ahead and passed the bill, and then the next thing it does is go to the Ways and Means Committee for consideration. And by the time it got there and had a hearing, it was just a few days before the end of legislature, and it died in that committee.
Oh, wow, even though it started so early. It just
shows
how, even if you think you're getting a head start, it may not be enough.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's exactly right. And you know,
so it isn't that it tanked. It's just that there was too much else to do, and it just went by the wayside.
I think that's part of it. I think it's, you know, to get something passed, it really needs to be a top priority. And I think that in this legislative session, it just did not rise to the top. And we are pretty adamant that it's something that our legislature needs to take seriously. So we'll be back.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. Now, it seemed to me that one of the, if anyone had an objection to this, it would be a company that would say, I don't want to have to put that on my label.
Yeah, well, the proposal was that they would simply have to disclose to the health authority that they're using these chemicals. It's not that people would see on the shelves.
Oh, it wouldn't be on the label.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be on the label.
Oh.
So it's really about giving the state the information they need to start thinking about how our children are being exposed and whether or not there are some connections to our biggest health problems. So that was really a lot of what the testimony was about from doctors and health professionals and researchers. They were saying we just need more information in order to protect kids from health effects.
So you said there was some really compelling testimony during the hearing.
Yes,
and can you elaborate?
You know, and you asked who could be opposed to this bill.
Right.
And it was actually pretty interesting to see that there were a lot of Oregonians who came out in support of the bill, nurses and doctors and researchers and businesses. And the folks who were there to represent the opposition mm-hmm. were the big national industry groups. So American Chemistry Council, the Toy Industry Association. But Oregonians were really saying this is something we want. And I thought it was really compelling.
Wow.
I could tell you a little story about
sort
of making the case for this bill.
Do.
So they have a very similar law in Washington State that is now implemented, and it's in place. They're starting to gather data about these toxic chemicals in children's products.
Okay, how did they manage this?
You know, they passed it. They were one of the first in the nation to start collecting this data, and they went through a sort of rigorous process with industry stakeholders and different groups, and they managed to get it passed.
And how long ago did they do this?
So it was passed in 2009, and then it took a little time to implement. So, and the disclosure is phased in. So the biggest companies, the major manufacturers, Mattel and Lego, and Walmart manufactures some of its own products. Those big producers are reporting now. And it will take a little bit more time, a few more years, before even the smallest producers are reporting.
So, okay, so they're reporting and they're starting to accumulate data. Are they coming to any conclusions? What are they doing with the data?
Well, the data is available on the Washington Ecology website. So it's something that people can go and take a look at, and it is really interesting to see
So
is it looks like.
Is it like by product? So if I wanted to look up sippy cups or pajamas or whatever, onesies, I could look it up but do you have to know the brand?
Well, so here's the tricky part is that it's reported by product class and product category. So you can go and find out what range of chemicals might be in pajamas, but you can't figure out if you have a pair of pajamas that you want to buy, you can't figure out whether that particular one has chemicals in it.
Whoa.
So it's much more about just sort of getting a big picture of the lay of the land, of what chemical use looks like. But the story I want to tell you is about how this law is actually turning into practical change.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And somebody came down from Washington who works on this program from Washington
cool.
Ecology.
Oh, God, that's great. Yeah.
And she came down to testify, and she told a story about, the way that they enforce this law is that they do spot testing, where they'll go take a range of products off the shelf and take them into the laboratory and look for these chemicals. And if they find them, but the manufacturer has not been reporting, then they can call up and say, you need to comply with this law. So
there aren't fines?
I actually can't tell you the details on how it's enforced. Like, mostly this is what I know, is that
Think that to make anything work, to make a company do anything, you have to fine them.
Right. You would think that, there would have to be consequences, but...
Right.
But I definitely am seeing that reporting is happening. We're seeing the data come in. Just as one example, they have more than 2,000 reports on children's clothing and footwear with chemicals in them. And more than 500 reports of toys that have chemicals in them. So those reports are coming in.
God, I'm imagining a little baby chewing on their toy like they always do, the keys, the blocks, the you name it, it's in the mouth.
Yes, well, this is exactly the story that this Washington Ecology person told during testimony. She said, you know, we tested a little baby shoe, a little flip-flop made for babies, and they found incredibly high levels of phthalates, which are these chemicals that can disrupt hormones when a baby is exposed. And so they called up the company, and the company said, well, because of your law, because of complying with your law, we've already reformulated that shoe. So you found one that had high levels of phthalates, but we've already found a way to make them without phthalates because of your law. So she was testifying, saying that just disclosure is one way to get companies to change their practices.
Without even banning it, just making them have to disclose it. That is fascinating. I mean, it's an interesting way around it rather than going to the company and saying, this is now illegal, you can't do it.
That's right. Like, it's definitely making an impact. And then what was fascinating is that she gave this testimony, and then somebody from the Oregon Poison Control Center got up to speak. And what she said is that it's remarkable how many parents will call and say, my baby has been chewing on this little shoe, for example, and can you tell me whether I need to be concerned? And she said that because there is not disclosure in Oregon, she has nothing to tell that parent about whether or not they should be concerned. So her testimony was, you know, that that products like baby shoes do end up in the mouths of babies. They chew on everything, and so it's important to know, as a health official, like what we're dealing with here.
Well, you know, one of the cool things about having this online access in Washington is Oregonians can go to there and look at it and basically use it as an extension of our information system and kind of go around. Okay, Oregon, you want to be behind the times, whatever, don't want to deal with it. So we'll get our information from Washington, but we need to collect that data as well.
That's right. And there is part of the bill, part of the proposal was engaging, you know, the experts in Oregon in this sort of national clearinghouse of information. You know, so what we're facing here is, you know, what's happening is that the federal law for regulating chemicals in our country is broken. Everybody knows it. It's a 1976 law. It's never been revised. And everyone from the big chemical companies to the environmental groups know that it needs to be revised.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're waiting for that to happen, what we're seeing is that states across the nation, one at a time, are addressing the chemicals that come to surface as being the things of most concern. Or they'll deal with disclosure, or they'll deal with a group of chemicals like flame retardants, and they'll say, we're going to deal with this. And so if you have a different law in all of these different places, it's great to have a way to share that information. So there, part of the bill was to engage in this clearinghouse of information.
And who could be against that?
And who could be against that, right?
Right. I mean, having information is power. And, of course, being ignorant keeps the power in certain hands.
And, you know, we've seen, we've been bringing bills before legislature asking Oregon to take responsibility for toxics in children's products for a few years in a row. And I have really seen the argument change from the Chemistry Council. You know, this big, well-funded industry group, you know, at one time was arguing about the science. They're not really arguing about the science anymore. Now what they're saying is this is something that the federal authorities need to take care of, and the states shouldn't be doing it.
Oh, and of course they know that the feds are so ineffective that that'll put it off forever.
That's right. That's right. And what we like to say is, well, if you take a look at where the best innovation has come from in protecting people over the course of, you know, a decade, you're looking at the states.
Mm.
You know, that, like, for example, Oregon passed a bill to limit toxic flame retardants, and after Oregon passed it, you saw other states in the nation follow their lead and pass similar bans. And eventually, the Environmental Protection Agency, the national agency, followed their lead and did a voluntary I guess it goes both ways.
Sometimes it comes from the federal level. Sometimes it comes up from the state level.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, during the hearing this year on this bill, you heard legislators acknowledging that, you know, that Oregon needs to take responsibility and start addressing toxics in children's products. And part of the reason to do that is to bring people to the table on the federal level.
Okay, Jen, what about adults? I mean, why does it have to be just kids? Don't we get to know about things that my flip-flops? I know I'm not putting my flip-flops in my mouth, but
that's right.
Maybe my dog is.
Well, and dogs, certainly. Yeah, I think that's a whole other range of vulnerability. But, you know, our philosophy at Oregon Environmental Council is to start by looking at children's products because children are most vulnerable. And they're vulnerable in a way that chemical exposure can lead to a lifetime of health trouble, right? So
yes.
If we're looking at the chronic disease that we face that's creating like a huge burden on our families, but also on our economy, on our culture, these are diseases that sometimes can be linked back to exposures that happen really early in life.
Can you speak up again?
Sure, yeah. So
Thank you. Is
this better?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm talking about how early in life exposures can lead to disease down the line. That's what the latest science is telling us. So if I want to protect, you know, the next generation of dads and grandpas and grandmas from health effects late in life, I need to start by protecting them as babies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but I certainly also think that it's worth adults taking some caution in their own lives to avoid toxics. And I think that's our focus. Like, as we wait for the next legislative session to bring this bill back again, a lot of my job is about telling people what they can do to avoid some of these toxic chemicals.
Oh, so let's talk about that.
Certainly. So we have a couple of great resources on our website, which is oeconline.org.
Wait, oeconline.org. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And there's something called the Healthy Homes Checkup Kit.
Ooh, nice.
And you can get this, you can download this from online for free, and it gives you a checklist that takes you through your home looking for the things that are assets that are going to make your home healthier and some of the things that are burdens that might be causing a health problem.
Okay.
So just one great example is that it's science that came originally from NASA that tells us that houseplants are actually really good for indoor air quality.
And how many?
Well, you know, it takes a lot. It definitely takes a lot. And I think, you know, the studies are really designed to look at houseplants in very small, confined areas. You know, they're talking about, you know, whether or not it would be a benefit to have houseplants in a spaceship, right?
Oh, right.
But what they found is that houseplants will actually take up some of those toxic chemicals in our air that come from furnishings and paint and finish. So it's not a substitute for fresh air, but it's one thing that you can do to improve your air quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another example is, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when you paint your house, that paint smell is volatile organic compounds. It's chemicals that can be very toxic to health, especially when you're exposed to them over some time. But a lot of people don't realize that even after the paint dries, it takes a few weeks for that off-gassing of chemicals to stop. And if you're storing those paint cans, those half-full paint cans, in your home, in your living area, then even those paint cans can continue to release VOCs.
Well, okay, so I bet there are a lot of people who keep them in the basement.
Right, yeah.
And so then they're coming up.
And so the best advice that I would have, right, is to use just the amount of paint you need. And then there's this new program in Oregon called Paint Care, which means that you can take your paint to a local paint seller, and they'll take it back and recycle it for you. So it's better to get rid of it responsibly than to actually let it hang around your home.
So, okay, so but if you end up with, you have too much, and I have a lot of little too muches, but I have them in a separate garage, it's a separate building, it's away from the house, and I don't go there too much. So that's probably better.
I think that's a very good solution, Anne. Yeah, okay. I think keeping them out of your living space is a good idea.
And then trying to use them up the next warm time that you can come up with using them.
That's right.
Right. And then try not to buy too much next time.
Yeah. And I would say another campaign that we have going on is, you know, legislature is just one way to get stuff done. You know, the other way we've seen change happen is when consumers go out there and say, you know, I really want to have safe products. And I've seen it work. I've seen it work again and again. Most recently, Walmart actually agreed to phase out 10 toxic chemicals from its supply chain for personal care products and cleaning products. And they're doing that because consumers have said they want safer products. So one of the things that we're working on is looking at those top 10 retailers out there and asking them, you know, to take that purchasing power they have, that decision-making power that comes from their place in the economy, and demand safer products.
Mm-hmm.
So recently there was a report on products that are sold at Walgreens. And you talk about dogs, protecting your dogs. One of the products that they tested was tennis balls that are made specifically as dog toys. And they found really high levels of lead, which is that heavy metal toxic chemical that harms the brain. And so
lead in tennis balls? Why?
In tennis balls.
But why would the manufacturer spend the money to put it in there?
That is a really good question. I think sometimes lead is used for a very particular purpose, you know, as a stabilizer, as something that, to give it, you know, physical properties. And sometimes lead is a contaminant.
Uh-huh. So it just shows up by accident.
That's right. And when there's no regulations and there's no disclosure and there's no reason to test, then sometimes, you know, there can be these incredibly high levels and just nobody's minding the store.
Right. Okay. So what's going to happen with these lead toxic tennis balls that dogs are buying? I mean, that owners are buying for their dogs and then they throw it and their dog gets lead poisoning.
That's right. Well, my advice is, you know, to really think about the fact that nobody is watching out for those dog products and think about that when you're buying products. And, it you know, these toxic chemicals tend to show up in plastics a lot, for example. You know, so thinking about buying products for dogs that are going to be safe, not only things that they're not going to choke on, but things that are not going to have a lot of heavy dyes or plastics, you know, that's one thing that you can do. But our sort of idea with Walgreens is that when we discover that there's these high levels of toxics, not only in dogs' products, but in shower curtains that people use, and the gloves the vinyl gloves that you use for dyeing your hair, these have these high levels of toxic chemicals. So we asked people sort of across the nation, but here in Oregon as well, to take these products to the manager of the store and return them and say, you know, I really would like to buy these from you, but I really can't because I know that there's toxic chemicals in them. And the idea is that through this consumer action, we're hoping that the higher-ups in the company will get the message and come to the table to talk about making some commitment to reducing toxics.
Okay, so if someone thinks that's a cool idea and they want to do it, how do they start with finding out, you know, like hair dye, or is it the gloves or whatever, shampoo?
Well, one sort of coordinating place that can help is a campaign called Mind the Store.
Mind the Store, that's great.
That's
okay.
Right, so you can go to mindthestore.org and find out what else is happening around the nation, what information is out there, and they'll give you a toolkit for what you need to talk to a store manager.
Mm.
But I definitely encourage people to do this on their own as well. You know, like one of the sort of under-regulated sources of toxic chemicals is personal care products. You know, that there are sort of a range of chemicals of concern in these products. All of the chemical components of makeup are listed on the package, but it's so hard to know, like, what what is a chemical I should be concerned about and what isn't. Mm-hmm. And some companies have made commitments to reduce toxic chemicals in their products. And I encourage people to just look on the package, find that 1-800 number, and give them a call. Say, hey, you know, I'm concerned about toxics. Do you meet rigorous standards for toxics in your products? And I figure the more people asking the question, the more likely it's going to become a management decision to commit to that.
Well, pretty much every product has their company name, website, and phone number.
That's right.
So it's easy to contact them. It's not like they're hiding. Well, I mean, they may be hiding once you call, but they seem to be accessible.
In my experience, a lot of times the answer you will get is that the people returning the phone calls don't know. You know, there's a lot of ignorance about toxic chemicals in products. And so they have to really dig to find out, well, you know, are there phthalates in these products? Well, I don't really even know what a phthalate is.
Right. So the scientist in the lab is not calling you back.
That's right. And then a lot of times the answer will be, you know, we comply with all of the safety standards of the United States. But what they're telling you, they're not telling you, is that that law regulating toxic chemicals needs to be fixed.
Right. It's way too lax.
That's right.
And it doesn't include many of the chemicals that have been developed since the 70s.
Well, in 1976, it was the first time that we had a national law to govern toxic chemicals. You know, it was the first time that we sort of realized that people could get sick from manufacturing chemicals and then those chemicals being in products. So at the time, the law was really considered a great public health achievement. We're going to start keeping track of these chemicals.
Mm.
But the way that the law is structured is that chemicals are considered innocent until proven guilty. So they don't have to the manufacturers have to tell the government that they're making these chemicals, but they don't actually have to tell them anything about the health and safety of them. So these products, these
chemicals go out. Does that mean they're not tested to be whether they're safe before they're used?
They don't have to reveal to government authorities whether or not they've been tested for safety. So yeah, a lot of these chemicals out on the shelves today, we just don't have health and safety data about their effects. And in order for the government to require that safety data, they have to be able to prove that people are getting sick, that there's reason to believe people are getting sick. And when there's, you know, tens of thousands of chemicals out there in commerce, it's really hard to point your finger at one single one. So basically, like, if you look at that law that's been around since 1976, about 80,000 chemicals have been registered for use. Of those, only 200 have had testing required on them for health and safety data.
That is a gap.
That's right. And of those that have been tested, mm-hmm. only 5 have been restricted or banned under the law.
Oh, my. Of the 200 that have been tested.
That's right. So there are many, many, many chemicals out there in commerce that, you know, lab studies suggest that there may be some reason to be concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Independent studies suggest that they might be linked to, you know, cancer, for example. But the law is just not working to regulate chemicals based on that data.
Whoa. Well, that is a chilling way to end, but I guess that's just where we're going to leave it for today. Thank you very much, Jen.
And I should tell you, Anne, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for change.
Oh, good. Oh, good. That sounds great.